up in Sleepy Hollow and chalked up to it being Sleepy Hollow. Headless corpse found in ravine. Then here, Hudson Valley. Help needed in the murder of a local bank teller. And when you read further, you discover that she was found in two pieces, head on a tree branch, torso in the river. Then here's another in southern Connecticut. Skull discovered off I-95. No sign of the body.
There are probably more. I'm sure Craig has his tech guy working on it, Kieran mused.
She sat again.
The guy's got to be living here somewhere. Somehow.
But how?
He'd need a credit card to rent an apartment. He'd need to make money somehow.
And he'd have to pull all this off and manage to look like one of the crowd. Is that so hard in New York City? Sarah asked. I mean, think about it. In New York, whatever you do, don't make eye contact. We walk by dozens of down-and-outers on the streets and in the subway. A few years back, a newspaper writer did an experiment and gave $1 to each person with a cup or a hat just on the streets. Within a mile radius, she'd given away $200. He could have begged on the street. He could have done a dozen things. He could have robbed people without actually killing them. No lost wallets are ever found. We're a city of tremendous wealth and the American dream. But when that fails...
It's a good theory, Kieran said. We'll talk to Craig. Give me a minute.
She disappeared and then returned to her office with Doctors Fuller and Miro in tow. Fuller was maybe 50, tall and extremely good-looking. Miro was tiny, older and still attractive, with dark curly hair, a pert little gamine's face, and an incredible energy that seemed to emit from her.
Show them what you just showed me, Kieran said.
And so Sarah did.
And when she was done, Fuller said, I think you've found something. Sad to say, but in history, many people have gotten away with crimes for years. And if these killings are associated, he was careful to commit his murders in different places.
But all close to the central point, New York City, Miro put in.
I believe my esteemed partner and I are in agreement on this, Fuller said. This could all be the work of one man. And,
he said, pointing at Sarah's computer screen,
this is old. Dates back almost 10 years. This could have been Perry Knowlton's first kill after the massacre in Cemetery Mansion.
Sarah felt a sense of panic welling in her. She wasn't afraid for herself. Well, she was, of course. But she was terrified for Davy. She looked at Kieran. Can you make sure that my aunt and Davy are safe?
Absolutely, Kieran promised. And I'll tell Craig that my good doctors have weighed in. We need to follow up on your theory. I'm not sure how, but we need to move in that direction.
Everyone was safe, and Sarah was extremely grateful. We had a cop at the house, or just outside the house. And of course, I brought out coffee, Aunt Renee told Sarah. I have to admit, I've been trying not to panic. This isn't coincidence. This is terrible. If Hannah was a target, and then, seems they killed the wrong Susie, but she was a target. And if I lose you and Davy, oh my God, I just want to be dead myself. I can't believe this. It isn't fair. Of course, I do know, she added dryly, that life isn't fair, but still, you all survived such terror. Sarah gave her a big hug. Then Susie and Sean hugged Renee, and then Davy, as their FBI guard stood back silently, letting their union go on. A young woman with the leanest body Sarah had ever seen, she wondered if she even had 1% body fat, came forward then.
Pizza is on its way, she said cheerfully.
We don't have any delivery here. An agent always acquires food. The Bureau has control of the entire building, with sham businesses and residences, used as office space. We're careful with taxpayer dollars. But we want you to be relaxed enough to, well, to exist as normally as possible under the circumstances. I'm Special Agent Lawrence.
She indicated a tall man near the door.
That's Special Agent Parton. We're your inside crew for the moment, and we work 12-hour shifts. Our apartments are in this building. We're always on call. Tonight, however, you'll have fresh agents. Nice and wide awake, that is. The doorman and the registrar downstairs are agents, and there are two agents in the hall at all times. If you will all get together and draw up a grocery list, we'll see to getting what you need. The kitchen is there. She pointed to the left of the front door. And the central bath is there. She pointed to the right. One of us will always be at that table by the door, while the other might be with you. In the very unlikely event that every agent between the entry and you is brought down, there is a dumb waiter in the back that is really an elevator. Naturally, our engineers have worked with it. Nothing manual, no pulleys or cranks. You hit a button, the door closes, and it takes you down. It can't be opened on the ground level from the outside. It can only be opened from the inside once you're down there. Same button, huge and red. You can't miss it.
This is wonderful. Thank you, Sarah said softly.
Catching the bad guys is our job, along with keeping the good guys alive, Special Agent Lawrence said. Let me show you to your rooms, she added. The living room or parlor boasted a dual area, a TV and chair grouping to the right, and a little conclave of chairs to the left. They were led down a hallway. The bedrooms were sparse, offering just beds and dressers and small closets.
The best place I've ever seen, Aunt Renee said. This one? Can I have this one?
Davy asked, looking into one of the rooms. They were really all the same. There had to be something slightly different for Davy to want it. There were no windows, no way for a sniper to have a chance, no way for an outsider to see who was inside.
Davy, whatever room you want, Susie said.
Davy grinned. What's special about it? Sarah asked him.
The closet is painted blue. Haint blue. Like they told us when my dad took me on a ghost tour in Key West. Haint blue keeps bad things away.
Excellent, Sarah told him. I'll go next to Davy, Aunt Renee said.
And we'll be across the hall, Sean agreed. And Sarah...
I won't be staying. I'm going with Tyler. Renee protested.
Oh, Sarah, the two of you should both be here.
Try telling a military man he needs extra protection, Sarah said lightly. I swear we'll be fine.
You're staying with Tyler, Sean asked her. Have you been seeing each other again? Last I heard, he was out of the military and living in Boston.
He came because of Hannah. We'll see this through, she said. She heard Tyler's voice. He had arrived at the safe house. It had, she realized, gotten late. She knew he and Craig had been going to the autopsy, and then to interview the building owner and whatever friends, or even acquaintances, they could find of Susie Cornwall's, to try to trace her steps before she was taken by her killer.
Excuse me, Sarah murmured and hurried out.
He and Craig had arrived together. She gazed at him anxiously. She didn't ask any questions. They were all in her eyes. Tyler nodded, looking over her head, and she realized that Special Agent Lawrence, Renee, Davy, Susie, and Sean had all followed her out.
Susie, he said softly. This can't make it better, I know. But the Susie who was killed was already dying a horrible death.
What? She asked.
Cancer. It had riddled her body.
Anything else? Sarah asked.
We went to her building and to the hospital. No one could tell us anything. She was likable. She kept to herself. She was polite and courteous. And I'm sure we would have all liked her very much. But even her doctor said that the experimental drugs weren't having the desired effect. She was going to die a slow and horrible death.
Poor woman, to suffer all that, and then...
Dr. Layton, the medical examiner, said she died quickly, Tyler said.
They were all silent. It was impossible not to wonder which would be worse, a slow and horrible death as her body decayed around her, or the horror of having her throat slit, her head sawed from her body.
It's my fault, Susie whispered.
No, it's the fault of a sick and wretched killer, and don't think anything else, Tyler said firmly.
Again, there was silence. Not even the agents in the room seemed to breathe.
So, Tyler said, we think that Perry Knowlton might still be alive. We're going to try to relive that night, together. All of us except for Hannah, of course. Try to remember what we saw in that haunted house, and if any of us might have seen Perry Knowlton.
Might have seen him,
Sean said, confusion in his voice.
We didn't know what he looked like. Not then. I mean, later there were pictures of him in the papers and on TV and all, but I sure as hell didn't see him in Cemetery Mansion.
Let's go through it. We came through at different times. Let's see what we all remember.
It will actually be good for you all, from everything I understand from my police shrink friends, including the shrinks Kieran works with, Craig said. And where is she, by the way?
She's with your partner, Mike, at Finnegan's, Special Agent Lawrence said.
She's not a target, and Mike would die before anyone touched a hair on her head, Craig said. Shall we?
He indicated the sitting area. Sean and Susie, holding hands, chose the little settee. Renee sat on one of the wingback chairs, and Tyler and Craig sat across from them. One chair was left, though there was room on the settee.
Sarah, sit,
Davy said.
Sit, please.
She smiled and sat. Davy settled by her side on the floor, curling his legs beneath him.
Davy, Tyler said, let's start with you. You knew there was something bad going on, and I'm sorry. I know you've been through this before. I saw him, the bad man, Archibald Lemming, Davy said. But I didn't know his name. My dad warned me about men like him. But your dad wasn't with you, whispering in your ear or anything, Craig asked.
Davy gave him a weary look.
My dad is dead. Of course, Craig said. And I'm so sorry. He said he would always be with me in all the good things he taught me, Davy said. So I watched for bad people. He was bad. I saw him go in Cemetery Mansion. And that's why you didn't want to go in, Tyler said.
He smiled at Davy.
And you warned us, but we were foolish, and we didn't listen. I was okay once I had my Martian Gamma Sword,
Davy said, perking up. He leaned back and looked up at Sarah.
And it was good, right?
It was excellent. You were a hero.
Which is why the bad guy wants to kill me now, Davy said pragmatically.
Sarah set her hand on his shoulder. Tyler told him,
don't worry. We will never let that happen. So, Davy and Sarah stayed out, while Susie, Sean, Hannah, and I went in. There were people ahead of us, but the theme park was only letting a few go in at a time. So while there were people ahead and people behind, we were still more or less on our own.
There were motion-activated animatronic characters everywhere, Susie said. I remember that.
I remember when we were going in, the hostess character stationed there, a French maid, I think, was acting strangely, Tyler went on. I don't think she knew anything then, but I'm sure she felt as if something was odd. Maybe she was bright enough to have a premonition of some kind. Maybe someone was late or early, or had gone in or hadn't gone in. She seemed strange, which of course would have been normal, since it was a haunted house. I remember that too, Sean said. As a high school senior, I couldn't admit it, but yeah, I was scared. But you know, we were part of the football team back then. We couldn't be cowards.
Susie was nodding. Honestly, I think, even though we were assholes about Davy not wanting to go in, I think we were a little unnerved from the get-go. Then there was the massive character in the music room, very tall and blonde. That automaton or whatever scared the hell out of me. What? Sarah asked. An automaton?
You couldn't have missed it, Susie said.
Seriously, it was tall, over 6 feet. It was creepy, really freaked me out. Sarah frowned. You know, we talked to the cops. We talked to each other. And still, sometimes it's like I remember new things. Maybe even my nightmares. I'm not sure. Honestly, I know we were almost running from the start, but when Davy and I came through, there was no character. There were no figures in the music room. Who could have moved an automaton in that kind of time? Especially a big one. Tyler leaned forward.
I remember it clearly. I remember how it scared Susie horribly. It was definitely there.
And when Davy and I came through, there was definitely not a character there, Sarah said. He was sitting at the piano, Susie insisted. Not when we came through, Sarah said. Maybe it...
What? Just disappeared? Sean asked her.
But I was so sure it was an automaton. It talked to me, Susie said. Oh my God, he saw me that night. He saw my face clearly, and yet he killed another woman. Sarah stared at Tyler and Craig hopefully. Was it possibly accidental? Was she old? Was she different? Was she not like me?
I'm sorry, Susie. She wasn't your twin, but...
But he saw me over a decade ago. People change, Susie said harshly. She sighed. Okay, fine. So much for that theory. He meant to kill me, to behead me, to saw my head off. She started to sob. Sean pulled her close.
Don't cry, Susie, Davy said. He wants to kill all of us, and he's a terrible person. None of it is your fault.
Poor Hannah. But could it be? Could it really be? Susie whispered.
Him,
Davy said somberly. They all looked at him. He had propped his elbows on his knees, folded his hands, and rested his chin upon his knuckles. He looked like an all-seeing wise man.
Him, the other killer, the bad guy, Davy said.
He shook his head.
Yes, I think he was the other bad guy. If you saw him, he was gone when Sarah and I came through. He was gone because he knew. The one guy, Archibald Lemming, he was meant to die, but his friend, the one everyone thought was dead, he meant to live. He was there that night, but he got away. It would have been easy. Everyone was screaming and running. Yes, it is him, right? He killed Hannah. And he's still out there, right? He's the one who is trying to kill all of us.
There was silence. Then Tyler told Davy.
But you knew, Davy. You saved us then. And you know now, and so you're going to help us all save ourselves now.
He smiled.
Because your dad taught you to be smart. He taught you to know people, which is something we who don't have Down syndrome don't always do.
Davy smiled back at him.
Mom is good too. Dad taught her to be a little bit Down syndrome.
Renee smiled and nodded. Yep, I'm a little bit Down syndrome thanks to your dad. He was a very good man. Davy straightened proudly. Tyler turned and looked at Craig.
I think that must be it. The character who was there and then wasn't. Archibald Lemming didn't kill Perry Knowlton. I think maybe Lemming had a death wish, but he wanted to go out with a bang. Lemming had some kind of insider info about escaping through the infirmary. They killed personnel to escape. But even then, they had to have timing information and all. So say that Knowlton was the brains behind the escape. And then they found haunted hysteria. What a heaven on earth for someone who wanted blood and terror.
And all these years, Susie said. He's been just watching, waiting? Is that possible? Sarah said softly, we think he has been busy. Yes, he's been in New York City. This is theory, of course, but we've done some research. We think he's still been murdering people. He just takes little jaunts out of the city to kill. Oh my God, Susie said.
But now, Tyler said. He's killing here, right in the city.
Revenge, Sarah said. But he lived, Susie protested. Yes, but he might have idolized Lemming. And while he's a killer and he's been killing, this is different. He's been imitating Lemming, but not making a huge display out of his crimes. But now, who knows? Maybe he was careful, but then he saw Hannah on the street or something. Maybe he was just biding his time. But the thing is, now, Susie breathed. Sarah looked at Tyler. And now, we have to have our justice before he gets his revenge. Chapter 6. The safe house wasn't far from Finnegan's, making it simple to leave and head to Broadway in the pub. Kieran had gone there to help out, which she often did when she was anxious and waiting for Craig. But by the time Sarah and Tyler reached Finnegan's, it had grown quiet, and Kieran was back in the office. Declan, Kevin, and Danny, Sarah had learned, had become accustomed to having their office turned into a conference room for Craig and Kieran when something other than inventory and payroll needed to be attended to. An undercover agent, someone who worked with Craig, was sitting at the bar, watching the crowd while sipping a Caliber, Guinness's entry on the non-alcoholic side of beer. He greeted them with a friendly nod when they arrived. Declan, behind the bar, cheerfully sent them to the office. Kieran was at the desk. Everyone is good? Safe? Kieran asked as they entered and took up chairs in front of the desk. Safe and sound, Sarah said. I'm just so glad Davy is there now. I have a feeling that Perry Knowlton must know Davy was the key to ending everything that night.
Maybe not, Tyler said. He didn't try for Davy first.
No, he went for Hannah, who, sad to say, was an easy target. She wouldn't have recognized him, but maybe he recognized her. And she would have been an easy first mark because she would see men. She was working as a hooker, Sarah said sadly.
And that makes sense. Go for the easiest victim first, Kieran said, nodding. And we think we have a lead, though where it can take us, I don't know,
Tyler said. Craig went on to explain what they discussed.
And no one really saw him, right? What he really looked like? Asked Kieran.
I never saw him at all, and neither did Davy. We think he was pretending to be an automaton in the music room. From what they said, he scared Susie half to death when they went through. But there was no such person, or automaton, by the time Davy and I arrived. He could have run out already, or he could have gone through any one of half a dozen emergency exits.
But his picture was in the papers, on the web and TV screens, right? Kieran asked. Yes, of course, Tyler said. I did see him. He was very distinctive. Tall, at least my height, and lean. With a long face with sharp cheekbones and jaw. Well, at least not a medium height. Someone who blends in with the crowd. But there are a lot of men over 6 feet in New York City, Craig said.
Maybe you should be staying at the safe house, Kieran said thoughtfully.
No, Sarah said.
Well, Tyler, too. He's one of you, Kieran pointed out. Tyler shook his head.
I think Sarah and I will be all right. If he comes for one of us, it's going to be when we're alone. He isn't going to come to a hotel room. He doesn't kill with a gun, but with a knife. I have a gun, and it's always best to bring a gun to a knife fight. As long as you're steady, the gun is going to win every time. And we should have something to work with soon enough, said Craig.
He looked at Sarah and nodded in acknowledgement.
Sarah had it right, we think, from the beginning. We found no less than 10 unsolved murders that had to do with total or near decapitation, ranging from Westchester County, Hudson Valley, and the Sleepy Hollow area, as Sarah found, to Connecticut and New Jersey. Regional police are sending us everything they have on those killings. We'll be able to go over them tomorrow. But most importantly, our tech department has entered the last known picture of Perry Knowlton into the computer. Tomorrow we'll be starting off the day with images of what Perry Knowlton might look like now, and we're putting out pictures of Hannah and Susie. Hopefully someone might come forward, having seen them somewhere. Our appeal to the public will contain a subtle warning, of course. No one is safe while this man is at work.
We should call it a night, Kieran said, and get started again in the morning. I have a court appearance at 9, so I'll be out part of the day. Sarah, you should hang at the safe house during that time. Sarah knew she probably should. That fear did live within her somewhere. But she was going to be with Tyler. She smiled. I'll be safe, she promised. Everyone stood. Out in the bar and dining area, they said goodnight to Declan, the only one of Kieran's siblings still working. Tyler and Sarah were silent as they drove to the hotel. The valet took the car. The hotel lobby was quiet. There was no one in the elevator with them. You think we're really safe here?
I think I'll shoot first and ask questions later, Tyler said.
She smiled.
You should think about going to the safe house, he told her quietly. It's one thing for me to take chances with my life, but I'm not so sure you should have that kind of faith in me.
I have ultimate faith in you. That night, she didn't have to join him in the shower. The door was barely closed, his gun and holster were barely laid by the bed, before he had her in his arms. Before they were both busy grasping at one another's clothing and dropping it to a pile on the floor. His kisses had become pure fire, heated, demanding, like a liquid blaze that seemed to engulf her limbs and everything in between. She returned his hunger ravenously, anxious to be flush with him, to feel his flesh with every inch of her own, feel the vital life beneath that skin, muscle, bone, heartbeat, breath. He pressed her down to the bed and made love to her with those hot, liquid kisses all down the length of her body. The world faded away in a sea of pure sensation. She crawled atop him, kissing, touching, loving, as if she would never have enough. And then they were together. He was in her, and the sensation was so keen she could barely keep from crying out, alerting the world to their whereabouts and exactly what they were doing. She bit her lip, soaring on a wave of sheer ecstasy. All that lay between them seemed to burst with a show of light before her eyes, a field of stars and color. Then she drifted into the incredibly sweet sensation of climax as it swept over her and shook her with a flow of little shudders and spasms. And then they were still, with the incredible sense of warmth and comfort and ease, her just lying beside him. She felt she should speak. She didn't want to. They'd been this close once before, when life had been all but utopia. But everything had changed. He'd said that she'd left him, but he had been the one to walk away, move away, start a completely new life. He pulled her close to him. She thought he might speak. He did not. He just held her, his lips brushing her forehead as they lay there. She stared into the darkness for a long time, not sleeping. There was sound, the slightest sound in the hallway. Tyler was out of bed, his Smith and Wesson in his hands, before she could really register the noise. He went to the door, and then he came back, returning the gun to the side of the bed. Sliding in beside her, he told her, 2 girls and 708 returning from a night at the bar. They're trying to be quiet. Kind of surprising one of them hasn't knocked the other over yet. She smiled. This time when he pulled her close, they made love again. And then she did drift to sleep. She thought she would dream of sandy beaches, a warm sun and a balmy breeze, and Tyler at her side. Instead, she dreamed of a tall, dark man lurking in the shadows, watching her. She was back in Cemetery Mansion, racing after Davy, trying to stop him. And she was in the music room, with no one else there. And it seemed no matter how fast she ran, she couldn't reach the dining room, couldn't find Davy, couldn't get out. And though she couldn't really see him, she knew that he was there. The tall, dark man. Watching her. Calculating when it would be her turn. Tyler had never needed much sleep, and he was glad of it. At just about 6 in the morning, he woke. At his side, Sarah was twisting and turning. He whispered to her, pulling her closer to him, not wanting to wake her, but not wanting her to suffer through whatever was going on in her dreams or nightmares. He wanted to ease whatever plagued her, even while he marveled at being with her once again. Her body was so smooth and sleek, curved upon the snow-white sheets. Her hair had always been a sunny shade of gold, and it fell around her like a mantle.
"Sarah," he said gently.
Her eyes opened. For a moment they were wide and frightened, just for a moment. And then she saw his face and she smiled and flushed. "Nightmare," she murmured.
"So I gathered. About?"
"Cemetery Mansion," she said softly. "You know, sometimes it takes me a few minutes to remember what I had for lunch the day before, but I remember everything about that awful night."
"So do I."
"Do you ever dream?"
"I've had some dreadful nightmares, yeah, for sure."
She sighed. "I'm glad to hear it. I mean, I'm not glad you have nightmares. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I guess that's not really very nice either."
"You're human."
She stared at him for a moment, blue eyes still very wide, but her expression grim. "Human. So is this killer. He's human, and he's done these things." Tyler was silent a minute. Then he told her,
"There's something wrong with people like Archibald Lemming and Perry Knowlton. You know that. You've been around Kieran enough. When they get to such a point, it's a fine distinction between psychopaths or sociopaths. Whatever wiring they have in their heads, it's not normal. In a sense, they've lost all their sense of humanity. The normal person is heartsick to hear about an earthquake that killed hundreds, but this killer would want the pictures. He would relish the death and destruction. He would wish that it had been his handiwork."
She shook her head. "I can't feel sorry for him. He's sick, but after what he's done to people, that kind of sickness doesn't draw any sympathy from me. I guess it should, but it doesn't."
"The thing is, even if he were to finish this bit of revenge..."
"You mean kill all of us?"
"Even if he were to finish, he wouldn't stop. It's impossible to know now if he did commit any or all of the unsolved crimes you and the FBI found. It's impossible to know if he was gearing up, practicing for this, or if, in his warped mind, he realized that he should take his desire to kill and turn it into revenge."
"He's got to be stopped," she whispered.
"He's careful. Hannah was an easy target. He found Susie Cornwall, the wrong Susie Cornwall, and lured her off alone easily enough. But now we're on to him, and he'll figure that out. I don't think he intends to take any chances, so we have to keep the others at the safe house and be incredibly alert and aware ourselves."
He heard his phone buzzing. It was time to be up and moving. He reached for his cell. He wasn't surprised the caller was Craig.
"The pictures are about to go out." "That's good." "Yes, but you have to know something." "What is that?"
He heard a bit of commotion. The next thing he knew, Craig was gone, and Kieran was on the phone. "Tyler, he's been at Finnegan's. This man who appears to be Perry Knowlton, he's been at Finnegan's several times. I'm not there all the time, so I don't really know, but I've seen him. I've seen him at least 3 times. It was early, and that meant there was no problem for Declan to open the pub just for friends and family. His siblings, along with his fiancée, Mary Kathleen, and Craig, Tyler, and Sarah, sat around 2 tables that they'd pushed together, drinking coffee. Sarah made sure Tyler was introduced to Kevin, Kieran's twin, the one brother he'd not met yet. Kevin couldn't stay long. He was shooting a Why I Love New York commercial for the tourist board at 10.
"We shouldn't have asked you to come in," Tyler said. "Nice to meet you, and I'm sorry." "It's all right. Declan called me as soon as he received the message from Craig with the police computer rendering of Perry Knowlton. I never waited on him, but I know I've seen the bastard in here. It's frightening and interesting. Because if you recognize him, hopefully others will too," Tyler said.
Craig had printouts of the composite lying on the table. He told them,
Perry Knowlton is 43 years old now. He started his killing binge at the age of 29 and was convicted of 5 murders and incarcerated by the time he was 31.
Tyler picked up the account.
In prison, he met Archibald Lemming, and they probably compared their methods for finding their victims and for killing them.
And, Kieran continued, they would remember their crimes. They were probably thrilled to have someone to tell, trying to one-up each other all the time. They liked to enjoy their memories over and over again, just as others would enjoy talking about their vacation to Italy or a day at a beautiful beach. Declan tapped the image of Perry Knowlton that lay on the table.
A few times before, and then less than 2 weeks ago, he was at the end of the bar. He ordered whiskey neat. He was polite and even seemed to be charming those around him. Easy, level voice. You're sure it was him?
Tyler asked.
I'd bet a hell of a lot on it, Declan said. And I'm damn sure too, Kevin said.
He was at a table maybe a month ago, Mary Kathleen told them all. And he was quite amicable, very nice. Complimented the potato soup and the shepherd's pie.
I served him when he was hanging around with a number of the regulars, Danny said. He had them all laughing.
The all-around guy next door, Kieran murmured. Historically, there have been several truly charismatic serial killers, the poster boy being Ted Bundy. He worked for a suicide crisis center, for God's sake, with Anne Rule, long before he was infamous for his crimes and she was famous for her books. But he wasn't the only one. I don't know that everyone would have fallen for Charles Manson, but he knew how to collect the young and disenfranchised. Andrew Cunanan, Versace's killer, was supposedly intelligent and affable. Paul John Knowles was known as the Casanova killer. The list can go on, but... A charming, bright, handsome psychopath, Sarah murmured. Great.
But he's been exposed now, Tyler reminded her. Someone knows him. Someone has seen him and knows his habits.
Oh, aye, and sure, Mary Kathleen said. He likes good shepherd's pie, tips well enough, and has lovely laughing green eyes. Ah, but how they must look when... She broke off, shivering. Horrible. Don't just shoot him. Skin him alive. Saw him to pieces, she said passionately. Sarah set her hand on Mary Kathleen's. But that's what makes the difference between us, she said. We wouldn't do those things to another human being. Although I understand completely what you're saying, I was there. The idea that killers find a little torture themselves does have its appeal.
Do any of you remember the first time you saw him? And the last time? Tyler asked. The first time, Declan mused.
Last October, Mary Kathleen said. Oh, I do remember, because I had to leave early that day. My niece was coming over from Dublin. He offered to pay his check quickly.
That was nearly 5 months ago, Kieran murmured.
Do you think he's been looking for Sarah all that time? How would he have known that she worked here at all? Declan murmured. He might have found her by accident. He might have seen her one day and followed her. It's a huge city. But we all know that sometimes it can be a very small world. And it's easy to discover personal details on social media, Tyler said.
My address was never out anywhere, Sarah said firmly.
Of course not, Declan said. But you might have written something about the pub, and that brought him here.
Maybe, she murmured.
He must have figured out after the first month or so that she wasn't working here anymore. Declan commented flatly. But...
Craig's phone rang and he excused himself.
He thought that she'd come back, Tyler said. He knew you worked here at some time or another, Sarah. And when was the last time anyone saw him? Like I said, Declan told him, 10 days to 2 weeks ago. I'm sorry I can't be more definite.
He knows some things, but obviously not enough. Kieran said, looking at Sarah. He didn't know Susie wasn't using Cornwall anymore. He didn't know she and Sean Avery were married. He tries to find what he's looking for, but he hasn't the resources he'd surely love to have.
That means we've got an edge on him, she added softly.
Director Egan called, Declan told them.
He was, Sarah knew, Craig's direct boss.
He says he'll keep Josh McCormick in here, watching over us in the pub during opening hours. We are licensed to have a gun, which is behind the bar, but only the family has access.
Oh, if something were to happen to someone in the pub, or to Finnegan's. I'm so sorry I seem to have brought this on you, Sarah said.
You didn't, Declan said. We're tough. We'll manage as we always have.
Sláinte, Mary Kathleen said, raising her coffee cup. Smiles went around. Coffee mugs were lifted in cheers. Craig returned to the table.
Tyler, there's been a break in the case. The bartender, time and time again, also recognized Perry Knowlton from the composite. I think we should talk to him again. Ready when you are, Tyler said, standing.
He looked down at Sarah. Hell no, she said. I'm not staying anywhere. I'm coming with you. When they reached the bar in the theater district, Detective Bob Green and his photographer, Alex Morrison, were already there. Tyler almost ran into Morrison.
Hey, y'all made it,
the man said, watching him curiously.
There are no security cameras here, so they want pictures of the bar and the entry. Seems our fellow Knowlton liked to hang around here a lot. He flirted with Hannah. Sorry, you can talk to the bartender yourselves. I'll get on with it.
He seemed to be taking pictures of all aspects of the bar. The place was still closed. It was 10:30, and Tyler imagined it opened by 11 or 11:30. They needed the time alone with Luke, the bartender. Luke was already talking to Detective Green, who was seated on one of the bar stools. He saw Sarah coming and smiled and waved, obviously a bit taken with her. That was good. She had said she could be helpful. And though Tyler really wanted her safely far away from the action, she was useful. So far, she'd actually garnered far more info than he had, just by being friendly and curious. And he was supposedly the investigator. Luke greeted them all and offered them coffee. For once, Tyler thought he'd been coffeed out.
I should have been able to meet you wherever, Luke said. I don't usually work days, but the other bartender quit. She saw the picture and she just quit. That guy's been in here lots. He was teasing and flirting with Hannah the night she was murdered. But can it really be him? He seems really decent. Nice. He tips big, unlike a hell of a lot of people around here. Are you sure that it's him? We're sure we need to find him, Tyler said.
Have you seen him since Hannah was killed? Sarah asked.
Oh, yes. Yes, Tyler asked. Hell, he was in here last night. And I mean, until the news this morning, I had no clue. No clue at all. I was nice, he was nice. Oh God, he's good looking, you know? Flirtatious. He talked to so many girls. I just hope. Oh God, I hope none of them turn up dead. We're hoping that too, Craig said.
Detective Bob Green looked at Craig.
You guys are handling the safe house. We'll see to a watch on this place.
He won't come back here now, Sarah said.
Well, he's pretty cocky, Luke said.
Sarah shook her head. He didn't think that we'd know it was him, but now he knows we're looking for him, thanks to the picture we released to the press. I think he'll lie low for a while. But hey, sure, keep an eye on the bar.
We don't have a hell of a lot else, Green said. She's right, though.
Tyler swung around. It was the photographer, Alex, who had spoken, and he was now coming up to join them. He flushed and said,
Hey, I'm with the forensic unit, civilian, not a cop, but I've taken a hell of a lot of photos and, well, here. Here's some of what I got at the park the other day, the park where Susie Cornwall was found. If you look...
He held his camera forward, twisting it around so they could gather close to see the images right side up.
We're looking at the body of Susie Cornwall in situ, Green said. Yes, yes. But I just realized what else I have here, studying it all. Let me enlarge it for you. Look at the people, Alex said.
He clicked a side button. The image honed in on the crowd, growing larger. And there he was. Perry Knowlton, aged just as the computer suggested he would age. Tall, with a head full of blonde hair, lean face, rugged chin, broad, high brow. Lean, long physique. Tall, yes, standing next to a rabbi with a tall hat. And a guy who looked like a lumberjack. He almost blended in with the crowd. He does come back to the scene of the crime, Sarah murmured.
He's been everywhere, Alex murmured. He's been here. God knows, the man might have been in the city since the Cemetery Mansion massacre.
You remember the massacre? Sarah asked him.
Anyone who was in the city at the time remembers it, Detective Green said. Some more than others, Tyler said, studying Alex. Were you at the theme park? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was already there. When I was called in to work for the local unit that night, I was still so raw. I'd made it into the academy, but one time when I was sitting around sketching to pass the time, a colleague told me they were short in the forensic department. My curiosity was tweaked, and I figured I could always come back and finish the academy. I never did, but anyway, I wasn't making any kind of big bucks, if you know what I mean. So I was moonlighting, too, working part-time for the amusement company. That night, I was working as a float. You know, I was sent wherever they were missing an employee or actor. That night, I was a ticket taker, not far from where the cemetery mansion had been erected. I can't believe I was there, that I might have seen the creepy bastard go running by me as he escaped. I just remember the blood and the screams and the people who were so terrified, running, running, running.
He stopped, shaking his head.
Hell, I'd give my eye teeth to help him catching this bastard, so anything at all I can do to help, I'm there. I'm going to go back over the pictures we took at the crime scene when we found Hannah Levine. You know, both places where they found her. Head and torso. Interesting, Tyler said. Maybe you can find some kind of a distinguishing something about him that will give us a clue as to where he's been living. He has to be in the city somewhere. He wears black in these pictures, Alex commented. A black coat. He wears a black coat when he's in here, too, said Luke.
He cleared his throat.
Do you think he will come back here? I mean, I should be okay, right? He's going after women.
Alex Morrison was flicking through his digital pictures. Tyler reached for the camera. He'd just recently been taking shots of the place. The large, etched mirror behind the bar, the old wooden stools, the rather shabby booths out on the floor, and the tables there. He had taken pictures of the tables inside and of the outside of the establishment. A large canopy awning hung down over the front of the building, though it hadn't become a warm enough spring yet for patrons to want to sit outside, or even have a window open. But Alex Morrison had taken pictures outside, of the streets leading east and west of the bar. He had caught other buildings in his shots, and he'd caught a number of pedestrians. Tyler studied the pictures. He felt Sarah's hand on his shoulder. She was looking over at them as well. Mostly it appeared to be Manhattan's daily business crowd, rushing here, there, trying to get to work on time. People were in line at the coffee shop toward the corner. A woman had paused to adjust her shoe. Tyler glanced up at Alex Morrison. He was probably just in his early to mid-30s now. Tyler vaguely remembered him as the photographer back then, but they hadn't had any real contact at the time. But Morrison had been decent, straightforward, yet gentle due to their ages. However, not as brave or passionate as he seemed to be now. His photos were good. He had an eye for focus and detail.
Touch here, and you can enlarge wherever you want, Alex told them. Thanks.
Go back a few, Sarah said. There's a really great long shot. It brings in the street, going toward the Times Square area. Tyler flicked back. And at first he saw nothing unusual. No details at all. And then he paused. There was a woman in the road.
The street wasn't closed to traffic, but she was jaywalking, and in the middle of the road as cars went by her. All around her, neon lights blazed, even in the morning. The pictures hadn't been taken an hour ago. Some had just been taken as Alex had entered the bar. Tyler touched the screen as Alex had shown him. The image enlarged. She was wearing a white dress, white coat, and low white pumps. She had a bobbed platinum haircut, like Marilyn Monroe. He could see that, compared to other people walking in the vicinity, she was tall, really tall.
"She," Green murmured.
"Oh, Lord," Sarah said.
"What is it?"
Alex Morrison asked them, frowning as he turned the viewing screen back toward himself.
"She is a he," Tyler said quietly. "She is Perry Knowlton. When did you snap that?"
That's one of the last images I took, maybe 10 minutes ago.
Tyler was up and heading out before the others could blink. No, she was a he, and the he was Perry Knowlton. And he was out there, close. Closer than they had ever imagined. Chapter 7. Sarah sat tensely on her bar stool. Tyler had raced out. Craig rose, but hesitated.
"Go on. One of us should go too. And hell, you're younger than I am, if you're going to be running around,"
Detective Green said.
"I'll stick here. Alex is with me."
Then Craig was out the door.
"He won't be there anymore," Alex said dismally. "It hasn't been much time, and he's a tall man in drag. They have a chance of finding him," Detective Green said.
Alex shrugged. It was apparent he sincerely doubted that. "He's picked up new talents," Sarah said.
"What do you mean?"
Alex asked. "I've been reading a lot about him. Loner. He had an alcoholic, abusive father, but I really wonder what that might have meant. He was very young when he was apparently discovered cutting up little creatures in the park. And then..."
"So, what, a new habit?"
Alex asked. She smiled. "I guess he learned at Cemetery Mansion about costumes. There was nothing in his earlier history about him dressing up to perform any of his atrocities, or even to go and view the fruits of his labor. Nothing about wearing women's clothes." As she spoke, her phone rang. It was Tyler. Her heart leaped with a bit of hope that he'd called to tell her they'd taken Perry Knowlton down. Really, too much to hope.
"He's not on the street, but we're not ready to give up," he said. "I'm going to ask Detective Green to get you to the safe house. You can spend a little time with Davy and everyone."
She bit her lip. She didn't really want to go. She liked working with him and Craig, questioning people, listening. But she couldn't keep Detective Green sitting here all day on a bar stool. And she knew it was unsafe for her to stay alone.
"Sarah, is that all right?"
"Of course," she said. She handed the phone to Bob Green. She heard Tyler's voice speaking, and then Green told him,
"I'm gonna get some men on the street as well, but we know now Perry Knowlton is capable of being a changeling. He could be anything and anywhere by now."
Sarah could hear Tyler's answer.
"But that's just it. We are aware now. That makes a difference."
"I'll see Sarah to the safe house. More officers will be out immediately. I'll join the manhunt when I made sure Sarah is with the others."
He hung up and handed the phone back to her.
"I'll get you there now, in my car."
"You're going to leave already?"
Luke asked, looking unnerved.
"Someone needs to be... Am I safe?"
"He's on the run. He won't come back here," Green replied.
Luke swallowed. He looked at Sarah and said,
Come visit some other time, huh? We're not usually such a bad place. I'm..."
The detective had already risen. Luke was actually looking a little ashen, and Green clamped a hand on his shoulder.
"You're okay. I will have a patrolman on his way here. You're going to be okay."
Perry Knowlton was tall and blonde, and had ice-cold, dark green eyes. Which really meant nothing now. Eye color could easily be changed with contacts. Hair color was as mercurial as the tide. He couldn't change his height. They started where Alex Morrison's digital images had last shown him. Craig took the right side of the street. Tyler took the left. He entered a popular chain dress store. A number of shoppers were about, but he quickly saw the cashier's booth toward the middle front of the store.
"I'm looking for a woman. Very tall, platinum hair, in a white dress," he told the young clerk. "Have you seen her?"
"Oh, yes. Your friend came in just a few minutes ago. She's trying on maxi dresses. I helped her find a size." Tyler smiled.
"She's still here?"
"Dressing rooms are at the back."
"Thanks."
Tyler hurried to the rear of the store. There was a row of fitting rooms, five in all. Only one was in use. He looked at the foot-long gap at the bottom of the doors. Someone was standing in a pool of white. The white dress? He drew his gun and kicked open the door. A middle-aged woman, quite tall, with a fine-featured face, stared at him in shock.
"I'm so sorry. Oh, Lord, I'm so sorry. I'm after a killer," he said.
Hell, that sounded lame. He was just so damned desperate to catch Perry Knowlton. He was so damned close. Now he might well be close to a lawsuit.
"I'm so sorry, honestly."
She smiled at him.
"Sure, honey. But hey, you're the best excitement I've had in some time. I guess that was a gun in your pocket. Hi, I'm Myrna."
The FBI safe house was really pretty incredible. Entering was like going into one of the hundreds of skyscrapers in the city. They had to check in at the door. The girl at the desk appeared to be a clerk. She was, of course, an agent. And Sarah was aware that the man reading the paper in the lobby was an agent as well. They were given permission to go up. Bob Green paused to have a conversation with the agents on duty at the door. There was complete local federal trust on this case with those involved, but there was still a conversation. Aunt Renee was in the kitchen. She'd invited their FBI guardians to her very special French toast brunch that morning, and she was busy cooking away when Sarah arrived.
"All done soon.
Susie and Sean are going to join us." She smiled lamely.
"It's not so bad here," she said softly. "I wish you were hiding out with us, but I do understand.
As long as you're careful. Davy is in his room. He's doing okay. He understands."
"Of course he understands," Sarah said. She smiled. "He usually does. He plays us when he chooses."
"I guess so," Renee said softly. "Sometimes I wonder if I'm overprotective. But the thing is, there are cruel people in this world.
Well, as we know, there are heinous, crazy killers, but
I mean in general.
Grade school children can be especially unkind, making fun of anyone who is even a little bit different. And there are adults. They may not even be bad people, but they don't know how to manage. Honestly, sometimes neighbors will walk on the other side of the street if they see me coming with Davy. I need to let some of the good in. Odd thing to realize when you're hiding from a killer, huh?"
Renee smiled ruefully at her. Sarah bit her lip lightly and nodded. She was overprotective of Davy, too. And yes, the world could be cruel, besides sadistic killers. But it wasn't a bad thing to protect those you loved. Maybe it was just bad to assume others didn't love them equally. "I'll go see how he's doing," Sarah said.
"He loves you, you know."
"And I love him."
"He loves Tyler, too."
"And I know that Tyler loves him." Renee nodded.
"Tyler does love him. He really does."
"Breakfast smells divine," she said. "Is it still breakfast?"
"Brunch," Renee said.
"Yes, brunch sounds great. There's enough?"
"You know me. There's enough to feed a small army."
Sarah left her aunt and headed to the room Davy had chosen. She tapped on the door and he told her to come in. He was sitting cross-legged on the bed with his computer. He looked up at her.
"I miss my girlfriend."
"Of course you do. She's a sweetie. But I'll bet she understands."
He nodded. Then he said,
No, not really.
He shrugged.